We're fired up to have for you today our first two National Guard officers ever in the huddle. As part of our effort to cover topics that you, our listeners, want to hear about, Major Carla Raisler of the Kentucky National Guard and First Lieutenant Brock Young of the California National Guard are here with us in the huddle. The Army National Guard and U.S. Army Reserves are vital to our national security and defense of our nation and continue to be an integral part of our operational force. Service as an officer in the reserve components has a unique set of challenges that active component officers may not have to contend with. This is a Leaders Huddle Podcast, Episode 21, Part 1, a deep look into the total Army concept. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am Captain Micah Klein, your host for today's episode. Our first guest is Major Carla Raisler. Major Raisler enlisted into the Kentucky National Guard shortly after 9/11 and was commissioned as a signal officer from the University of Kentucky. Upon her completion of Signal Officer Basic Course, Major Raisler was assigned to the HHB 138th Field Artillery. In 2006, she deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom as a tactical intelligence officer for HHC 149th Armored Brigade, and again in 2011, she was deployed in support of Operation Enduring Freedom with the Kentucky Agribusiness Development Team as an agribusiness mentor and female engagement team leader. She has commanded the 138th Signal Company and the 133rd Mobile Public Affairs Detachment. She has served in multiple positions on active duty for special work and in federal technician positions for the Kentucky National Guard. She currently works as a team chief for Defense Cyber Operations Element. She also works in a civilian capacity as a cybersecurity professional in the healthcare industry. First Lieutenant Brock Young enlisted in the U.S. Army as a mechanized infantryman in 1996, where he deployed to Bosnia and served in every position of the Bradley Fighting Vehicle, as well as team leader. He joined the California Army National Guard in 1999 as an infantry M60 machine gunner. First Lieutenant Young was activated for a homeland security mission following 9/11 and later deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom with Alpha Company, 1st of the 185th Infantry, in 2003 as an infantry team leader and dismount element leader. Transferring into the MP Corps, he deployed to Kosovo in 2009 as the American Commanding General's Protective Security NCOIC. He also served as squad leader and platoon sergeant, and then commissioned through the Alabama Military Academy's State Accelerated OCS program in 2011. Upon completion of MP Bullock, he was chosen as the California Army National Guard Commander's aide-de-camp as an AGR position. First Lieutenant Young deployed to and served as the assistant officer in charge of the Maximum Security Detention Facility on Guantanamo Bay, Cuba in 2014, and returned and served as a full-time battalion operations officer for the 185th MP Battalion. First Lieutenant Young is currently the battalion S1 for the 185th MP Battalion. Carla, Brock, welcome to the Leaders Huddle. Now surpassing our 20th episode, it seems more than appropriate to reach out to our brother and sister in arms in the National Guard to discuss some of the topics that junior officers think about in the National Guard. Service in the Guard presents a unique challenge of serving as an Army officer and a member of the community. During a deployment to an area of operations, National Guardsmen and Army Reservists arm the combatant commander with soldiers with a unique set of skills beyond those other than Army officers. As members of the civilian community, the Army National Guardsmen and Reservists bear the ultimate task of bridging the civ-mil gap. Two of the goals of this episode are to expose our active duty listener community to some of the hot topics among the Guard and Reserve officers, and to share the best practices across the force. So this episode actually takes me back, because when I joined the Army, I joined in 2003, and I was 18 years old, and I joined the United States Army Reserve in Michigan. I remember I was in the 431st Quartermaster Company in Lansing, Michigan, which is still there. And I was a 77 Fox, a petroleum supply specialist. So having each of you on is just awesome. So if there's anything in your bios that I may have forgotten, please go ahead and say it now. Otherwise, I'm going to kick off the first question. Awesome. All right. So... our first question today is, can you please tell us, Carla, and then Brock, why you decided to commission in the National Guard?
Well, I was a post 9/11 enlistee. I joined with the belief that I could use my civilian IT skill set to help support those on the front lines. And the best way to do that at the time, I felt, was to become a signal officer. So as is the case with probably a lot of guardsmen, I know the ones that I've run into is that you join for various reasons. I hear a lot of people say they join for the college tuition, they join for the additional money, but you tend to stay because of the soldiers to your left and right. So the Guard really becomes family, at least here in Kentucky.
Awesome. Yeah, I love the I don't know what it is about my reserve experience, but I definitely felt like, the company commander and the XO when I was the acting PL or a soldier were really part of, we were just all part of one big family. You could call on your brothers and sisters in arms whenever you wanted, and they would be there for you. Brock, how about you?
Well, Micah, I served as a enlisted soldier for 14 years, making it to platoon sergeant. And was about to be promoted to Sergeant First Class. And then I started looking around. Ultimately, I wanted to put myself in a position to affect change across our organization. The Guard world is much smaller, much more condensed than the active duty world is. So as an officer, you can affect change on that large scale, affect more troops quicker in your career. And after a deployment to Kosovo, I had a couple of field grade officers mentor me. When I was a staff sergeant, sent me to an officer symposium, basically ordered me to go to an officer symposium. So I sat down, learned about some things about becoming an officer. And then pretty much following that deployment, I directed all of my energies toward commission upon my return, getting my 90 credits, which is required for commission, commissioned in the MP Corps, and the rest is history.
Very cool. So something I was thinking about is currently the Call to Active Duty program is open. I mean, at the time of filming this episode, has the thought ever crossed your mind about going from Guard to Active Duty? I mean, because at the moment the call is wide open, and it's an open or a closed thing. It's usually an all or nothing. Has that thought ever crossed your mind? I guess we'll start with Carla. And if not, why not?
Yeah, so the thought has definitely crossed my mind. I did work in some full-time capacity for the Guard for 15 years, either as an AGR, federal technician. So I really loved wearing the uniform, and going active duty would require me to make some family changes that I wasn't able to do. So the nice thing about being in the Guard is if you want to stay in the same state, then you are more than welcome to stay in the same state for 20 years. So that fit with my family dynamic. Now I still have the itch, but the Guard has done so well to educate me for free and to give me all sorts of high-speed civilian certifications that I have a very, very lucrative civilian job, so I'll continue here and support the Guard on the weekends because I do believe it's given me everything or made it possible for me to have the things I have today.
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. How about you, Brock? You ever think about it or no?
I gave some thought about it a long time ago. However, right now, I'm being AGR, I currently am active duty, so going the actual Title 10 route isn't really feasible for me. I've spent my time, I've cut my teeth in the Guard, I've made contacts, like Carla, my family situation just wouldn't be able to handle going active duty and deploying, not even deploying, just being stationed in Germany or even on the other side of the United States. That's not really where I'm at right now, but I am helping several of my subordinate lieutenants down in our companies make that jump. And for them, it's absolutely the right move for them. And I totally support it.
Awesome. All right. So transitioning to the second question, in an environment where competition for resources is extremely tight, what advice would you offer to platoon leaders and company commanders in the National Guard to make the very limited time that they have for training different and engaging? Because, I mean, no one wants to sit, obviously, in the orderly room or in the motor pool for the limited time that they do have doing nothing. They want to be engaged. So in an environment that does have such a limit on resources, what advice would you offer them?
Your quote reminded me of a great quote that I had a first sergeant once tell me, which was, nobody joined the guard to inventory toolboxes. And so I've always kept that in mind when I'm developing my training plan. We have a lot we have to do in a very condensed amount of time. And so really it's about finding creative ways to conduct Army Warrior tasks and MOS training concurrently, working with active duty or other reserve components in your area so you can conduct joint training or combined arms exercises. Don't be afraid to really take the initiative to reach out to your community or your local active duty bases to build those relationships. I am always looking for somebody in the community or, you know, a signal officer. So we have community resources like ham radio operators, you know, the guys that love the radios. And so, you know, we build those partnerships with them so that I can bring them in and offer really creative training. I'm a big believer in centralized planning and decentralized operations. So after first formation, I encourage and expect my officers and NCOs to take their, you know, team, squad, platoon off to conduct realistic and relevant training. So, you know, nobody wants to be a wallflower at drill, and it can be really difficult for officers, for leaders, to try to develop that training throughout the month that they can execute, because we've got all sorts of other tasks as well. I learned a long time ago that as the commander, I couldn't do all of the training myself that I wanted to. You know, I had to delegate that down to the lowest level and let them take their team and go and do whatever cool thing that section or that squad was manned to do.
Awesome. All right, Brock, what about you?
Exactly right. You have to think, not to sound too much like a broken record, but you have to think outside the box, being guard and reserve. With us, at least National Guard, our big asset is we work with outside agencies, both local and state, all the time. So leaders need to leverage those outside agencies to get training opportunities for them. For instance, the Center for Domestic Preparedness in Alabama, any guard unit can sign up for them and do DISCA training, search and extraction training, and it's usually paid for by the federal government. Things like that people don't understand it are there. We put units, full company level units, through annual training in Alabama doing DISCA operations, riot control operations, things like that. And that's just working with the federal government, working with state and local agencies to get those training opportunities out there. Ultimately, also with units, you do have to understand that, at least in the Guard, at least in the California Guard, we're only budgeted for training up to the platoon level. So typically, you want to try and limit the amount of training you do at the for company level certification. You want company level guys to know what they're doing, but concentrate on those platoon level tasks, concentrate on the squad level tasks, concentrate on those team level tasks, and that's how you get the biggest bang for your buck on during a training weekend. Is concentrate on those lower level tasks, because then it's easier when you're mobilized to build on that team, on that squad, on that platoon. And you'll find if your platoons are squared away, your companies are then squared away.
Interesting. Carla, do you have the same experience in terms of platoons only being the highest level that's funded for training, or is that something that's unique to the state of California?
That could be something. I guess it really depends. It's also unit-based. Brock's an MP, so they do a lot of the DISCA stuff. Where we are, with the units that I've been with, like with the artillery, aviation, it depends on what the mission set is and how that funding is allocated at the beginning of the fiscal year, and what kind of limits you're going to have as far as your training opportunities throughout the year. Takes a lot of creative thinking on your on the operation side.
Interesting.
And if I could, Micah, caveat off what Carla said, that's something that I know the Guard at least used to have an issue with is the operation cells for most of our companies, they can't just be dumping grounds for the soldiers who are broke, who can't necessarily be in front of soldiers. They have to be your squared away soldiers. They have to be your leaders that can think up, you know, outside of the normal training schedule kind of thought, the mindset, and reach out and find those training opportunities and actually be the ones facilitating training and getting out there and pushing the commanders and the platoons to actually conduct training in a worthwhile manner.
That's a great point. I love it.
And I think we're at such a wonderful time right now in the Guard. When I joined 15 plus years ago, it really was we were just learning how to do things the new way. And now I have seen some of the greatest planned and executed field train exercises in the past couple of years. And I think I really truly believe it's because we have become an operational force, and those brand new, that the new field grade officers who are doing a lot of that, the heavy planning, have had such great experiences working side by side with active duty, going through multiple deployments, that they're just on it. You know, this summer I was with an artillery battalion, and they were out, you know, doing their live fire, running through their tables. Then they called in air assets. The air assets came in and did swing load operations, moving artillery munitions from one training area to another training area. In the meantime, the soldiers on the ground are getting swing load trader refresher training. There's, you know, the aircraft would take off. The next thing you know, the Paladins are firing again, and then they would come back. Some pilots got to get out and pull some lanyards. Some soldiers got to get in and fly around on some Blackhawks. And then we did convoy operations to the new training area. And that was just something that it's taken those officers and those senior NCOs the last 10 years of experiences that they've had to really be able to create a training plan and execute it that was just beyond anybody's expectations.
That's great. I do have a question a little bit later, actually, about training readiness, but I guess I'll save the follow-up to that until then, although it is tempting. So this is near and dear to my heart personally, this next question, and that is that one thing about service in the National Guard that really makes it unique, I guess you could say, is that you're really never off duty, per se. I leave at the end of the day, and although I'm not quote-unquote off duty, there's definitely a delineation there from being in the office to being at the house. Whereas I don't feel as though it's quite like that, drawing on my time in the reserves, and then, of course, you're in the National Guard. But that's something that I'd like to ask about. So, Carl, as a company commander, how did you and your first sergeant keep track of the soldiers that were, one, progressing during initial entry training? And then how did you manage any issues that required your attention of activated soldiers in your unit?
Well, the whole idea of 1 week in per month and 2 weeks per year is I think for most of us, we add on a pejorative statement after the end of that, which is that's just not the case. And especially as a commander, you have a full-time job with part-time pay. You have to love it, and you have to love your soldiers. I do wish that officers were more realistic about balancing their desire for command with the reality of command. It's not for everyone. To your question, my first sergeant and I talked and text on a regular basis. The person I actually spoke the most to in both of my commands was my readiness NCO, who is the full-time person running the company day-to-day during the month. It's usually a sergeant first class. They track the soldiers through the training pipeline. They keep generally, as I've seen it in most places, they keep the information on a large whiteboard. So when I walk into the office Saturday morning or whenever it is I pop in, I can look up there and I can see where all of our soldiers are in regards to not only their initial training and that pipeline, but who's up for NCOES schools, who's going to OES schools, who's got any HUA schools coming up. And that way it prompts me to ask any questions if I need to. I have to put a lot of trust into that readiness NCO, and the First Sergeant and I both are equals, you know, throughout the month going back and forth just talking about soldier issues and, hey, have you talked to so-and-so? I hear they've got a work issue. Hey, First Sergeant, do you mind giving this person a call? You know, things that I think that require more of an NCO hand than an officer hand. So we spend, as far as issues, issues are issues, man. Whether it's 2 p.m. or 2 a.m., I've spent a lot of long nights tracking down missing soldiers and a lot of personal time, you know, meeting with or escorting soldiers to the VA. Or, you know, I've had soldiers show up at my desk who are, you know, homeless and jobless and carless, and I got to figure out how to fix it. So I communicate a lot through email throughout the month with my leaders. And then usually a week out from drill, I have kind of a leader's huddle via teleconference. And we'll just go over, you know, finalize, okay, this is the training schedule. Because as much as we love it to be locked in 30 days or more ahead of time, there's usually changes throughout the month. And then we go over that, get everybody on the same page, the upcoming drill weekend, answer any questions, maybe turn that switch back on and say, all right, you know, in 7 days from now, we're going to be executing this. It's quite the job and it's quite the task. But I think if you love what you do, it makes it at least bearable.
Yes. And I've got a follow-up question to that. So what advice, for all of our listeners out there that are guardsmen and reservists, what advice would you offer to a new company commander in the Guard or Reserves to balance the demands of company command in the Guard with, of course, the demands that you have working a full-time job for your civilian, you know, in your civilian capacity?
I think that the better you are at time management is going to be a real asset. We all have different ways of doing things, but scheduling a specific amount of time, just like if you were at a school, is say, you know, okay, these are the hours of the week that I'm going to dedicate to making sure I can log in and check my mail, make sure I'm getting the fragos and reading through those. And then involve your family in that decision and say, okay, you know, on Tuesdays from 6 to 8, I've got to work on unit business. Or on Saturdays from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., whatever works best with your schedule. I'm fortunate enough that I'm able to keep my email up all throughout the day, so I generally am a little bit more reachable as far as using the .mil email, and so I manage that, but then I try to have, I set some time away each weekend to really knock out, like, the big-ticket items.
Very good. And Brock, I want to sort of tap into your experience as a platoon leader. At the platoon level, what were some of your, I guess, tips or lessons learned in terms of managing the separation and just the outright demand of being full-time when actually, you know, not being full-time?
Well, ultimately, like Carla said, you're always there. You're always available, whether it's random, okay, I've got to go pick up a soldier or check on it, do a health and welfare on a soldier. You know, the fact that we're doing this without pay shows that, you know, the officers and NCOs within the National Guard and Reserve component, basically the Reserve components, they truly care about their people and want to do right by them. As a platoon leader, I was in a weird position of I was stationed in a platoon that was 7 hours from where I lived. So it was a little harder for me to do that. So my platoon and I, we made sure we took time after dark nights, after company dark nights, we made sure to plan it, sit together with the platoon sergeant over the phone with the squad leaders to make sure everything they needed to do prior to drill was done prior to drill so we could hit the ground running when we hit drill. So all those admin tasks that we could take care of that were computer-based, that could be done on technology, we did at home. So that way, when we actually showed up to drill, we didn't have to wait on people filling out, you know, whatever forms they were supposed to fill out between the month and everything else. We could just get down to training.
Great point. Any specific technology assets that you found to aid in this to make it easier so that when you did hit the ground, you could hit the ground running?
When I was a PL, not so much. It was obviously just phone and email, conferencing calls. We've got a dedicated conference call in number that could hold up to 20 people calling in individually. So that was a huge asset. Something I found in my current position as a battalion S1 is WebEx. I don't know if you guys have used it. It's the ability to call in and actually show what's being seen on a computer. And that way you can manipulate it and show people, and you can actually conduct fairly decent briefings over WebEx and not have to get everybody together in one place. So it's a very useful tool as far as briefing and utilizing technology in that manner.
That's great. I wish that we had that when I was a cadet. I was a cadet in the SMP program for all of our ROTC listeners out there, and we had training meetings up right before every drill weekend that we had. And what that really amounted to was calling into, you know, a conference call or something along the lines. And usually the commander and our admin NCO were at the company, and then everybody else was breaking away from work for the day to try and get on there. And there was definitely the sound of disheveledness. So if there was ever a way to, I guess, make that cleaner, sounds like WebEx is an asset.
Yeah, there's another option. I use a very similar one called freeconferencecall.com, and it allows you to get that conference line, especially for M-Day officers who it's, and like Brock says, you can go ahead and share your screen so you can have a PowerPoint up there, or at least, you know, sometimes I just have a Word document with the general stuff we're going to go over in that phone call. It could be seen from, you know, all different types of devices. So wherever you are, then you can go ahead and log in and get that information. There's a lot of great tools that we can take advantage of today that we didn't have back in our platoon leader days or, you know, cadet days. There's Slack. I use that for some of my teams. And while you can't put anything, obviously no folio on there or anything like that, but it does allow us to communicate in a way that we stay connected more than we have in the past.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I know the core team on the podcast uses, you know, that technology in order to keep in contact as well. Okay, so I'm going to transition to our last question for part one. This is our two-part episode. The last question will focus on the FRG. So one of our upcoming episodes features a group of military spouses, and they discuss their service in the FRG and other capacities serving as spouses of Army officers. So I'm curious, Carla, as a company commander, how did you leverage the FRG as a combat multiplier in the National Guard?
My husband loves the FRG because I always make him president. But it's hard. The hardest part is that we're all really separated throughout the state. So I have soldiers coming in from anywhere from 10 minutes down the road to 3 hours down the road. So family events was very difficult. And what I learned a long time ago was I stopped making family events so formal and started making them fun. I knew that families needed to spend time together. If you want that soldier to re-enlist, you have to re-enlist the whole family. And so, yes, you know, most people think that December drill is for making sure soldiers show up and still fit in their ASUs. But what's more important than their dress uniform, which, by the way, can be inspected any time of the year, is building bonds between families. And so I have two family events per year. And I also have an FRG Facebook page where I'll, you know, create a secret group and then invite all the families to that group and engage the families throughout the month. I make it a point to get to know people's family, their wives, their husbands, their children, their pets, if they have none of the above. But, you know, we turned it into, I said, what do you guys really want to do for Christmas dinner? Well, what they really wanted to do was to go bowling. And so we would go bowling. And the families have a much more enjoyable time coming to that event. And then that makes them more comfortable to open up and talk to the other family. And really, it's about creating that network. So when you talk about a combat multiplier, it's developing that web of family support that helps kind of basically encompass the unit and make it what we talk about when we say guard is family.
Great point. Brock, how about you at the platoon level? What did your unit do to leverage the power of the FRG for the guards?
Like Carla, it's just a matter of knowing what the family wants and what they're looking for. Some families are all about stay away from my family, don't contact them. Well, I've experienced that. But it comes down to, you know, if the, you know, the old saying, a happy wife, happy guard life, is, you know, if the wife, the spouse, husband, brother, boyfriend, whatever, if they are happy and can see a benefit with service in the reserve components, it's not just you're taking my loved one away from me on the weekend or 2 weeks or possibly on a deployment. It's showing them that, yes, this is the benefit that your family is getting, whether it's the TRICARE Reserve Select medical benefit, whether it's the ability to go on post and check out the commissaries and various exchanges, whether it's the camaraderie that comes from, hey, your loved one's away for however long, you can call this set of numbers and somebody will be there to help you. Just having that and making sure someone knows that can go a long way to making a family member feel a little bit better about their service member being in the Guard or Reserves.
Well, thank you both. So this wraps up part one of this episode in the Leaders Huddle podcast, a deep look into the Total Army concept. On the next episode, which is part two, we'll take a look at the training focus side of what it means to be in the Guard and Reserve. You can connect with us on iTunes, and we're also on the Google Play platform. We want to hear from you, our listeners, on the topics you would like us to discuss. So please leave a comment on our iTunes or through the Caldolf-sponsored Facebook page, Junior Officer Forum, and Twitter handle @JuniorOfficer_forum.